I'm Karen Florin, and this is the Storyline Podcast. Today I'm here with Kathy Zoll, Executive Director of the Homeless Hospitality Center located in New London for the past 15 years. Kathy's here to talk today about the bigger picture of the housing crisis in southeastern Connecticut, and we're thrilled to have you, Kathy. Could you talk a little bit about the bigger picture?
Yeah, I think we're certainly familiar with people experiencing homelessness, and that's a very important issue, and we've been working on it for 15 years and making, I think, a lot of progress in doing a better job. But the other thing that's become clearer to me is the very significant number of people that are living on the edge. They have a roof over their head, maybe not, you know, as good a roof as they might like, but they have a roof over their head, but they're struggling. They're struggling to stay housed. And the more that I see this, in addition to just the, you know, general issues of housing, is just to think about what does that mean for a person's life to be worried, you know, like every night, how am I going to pay the rent? Am I going to get evicted? What does that do to children who have to absorb that insecurity from their families? And what choices do people have to make to eat less or to invest less in things that they would really want to do because they're trying to pay their rent? So I think the affordability crisis of housing and quality of housing and availability of housing just is impacting people at so many levels that often we might not even see.
We have a picture in our minds sometimes of the homeless person. Could you tell us how that picture is probably a false picture?
Yeah. I think the key thing I would say about homelessness is that there's many different kinds of homelessness. There is the stereotype that people have in their mind of the person who's been homeless a long time and is, you know, living, you know, in a tent or other things like that. If I had to guess, I'd say that's 5% of all the people experiencing homelessness. Very real, very important. The vast majority of people that come to the door of the shelter have never been homeless before, never expected to find themselves on the doorstep of the shelter. They've had jobs and still have jobs. They've had homes. I think it's obviously a little overstated to say that many of us are a couple paychecks away from homelessness. But for many people, that's true. And a health problem, your car breaks down, your hours get cut. It is so easy to slip over the edge from being housed to being homeless. So I think a lot of people would not recognize that, oh, that's a person who's experiencing homelessness, because they just all like all the rest of us. And so, yes, it's a very varied population. And I think the stereotypes have some truth to them, like any stereotype in a way, but that's not the bulk of people experiencing homelessness.
Since we've started asking people to reach out to us about their housing situations, we've heard from people who are living in motels and people who are living in cars. How prevalent is that kind of a situation?
Probably motels more than cars. And part of the issue is that given there's not enough apartment units, we do have people for whom a hotel becomes their only, you know, available housing option. Obviously more expensive than finding a decent place to live, but for some people that's all they can find. You know, I think that number is much larger than the number of people living in their cars.
When we spoke recently, you mentioned two programs that are working really well right now, the Rapid Rehousing program, and then some special vouchers that are available because of the COVID pandemic. Sure. Would you talk a little bit about those two programs?
Yeah. So Rapid Rehousing is focused on people who are experiencing homelessness, and essentially what it does is it helps people with security deposit and a couple months of rent. absolutely has transformed the landscape of homelessness, because if I think back when we started, we would have somebody experiencing homelessness, maybe they get a part-time job at the minimum wage, and if you think about how long would it take you to save enough money to get a security deposit and first month's rent, now we can help people get housed, and then they can go on with their lives. So rapid rehousing, critical. As part of the various COVID-related funding from the federal government, there's also been some what are called emergency housing vouchers. And essentially what those are subsidies for very low-income people. So you pay 30% of your income and the voucher covers the rest. I might just say that's what most of the developed world does for everyone. Right? Who needs it? But here, unfortunately, vouchers are quite rare. So it's been a godsend to be able to help people link to those. And I'll just give one example. If you are unemployed and not disabled and a single adult in the state of Connecticut, basically, there's no welfare available. So you are literally destitute. And so we have people who can't work. It takes forever to get on Social Security. So they essentially are struggling, they're just struggling. With a voucher, at least they have a place to live. Once they get on their feet or they get income, they'll contribute some of it towards their rent. But in the meantime, they have a place to live.
And short of trying to solve the whole problem in one podcast, I do want to ask you about two things that you suggested might be a way forward. One of them was shared housing.
So basically, shared housing is, some of us have experienced it, right? It means having roommates. And I think we've, as a culture, developed this sense that every person has to have their own apartment with their own bedroom, their own kitchen, their own, living room. And again, of course, that's what we would want we want for everybody. It's just not realistic. And so it is much more cost effective for two or three people to share a two or three bedroom apartment. Makes it much more affordable, but all of our current sort of zoning regulations and many other parts of the housing system are really not very friendly to shared housing yet. Although, again, my hope is that people will become more open to that as an alternative.
And Kathy, the other big issue that you mentioned is that the systems of help available to people are very siloed, and sometimes it ends up being a full-time job, being homeless, unemployed, et cetera. Would you talk a little bit about that and a possible solution?
Yeah, I think as I try to continuously just come back and sit with people and their real experience. So much of what we've done of the social safety net is to sort of see a problem, food insecurity, let's have food stamps. You're behind on your utilities, let's have utility assistance. And again, each of these pieces is good. There's nothing wrong with them. They're very, very important. But as I watch somebody with limited literacy, without access to the internet or a computer, without the ability to navigate these complicated applications, they just don't know. Right. And they give up, and they even if they know something's available, they give up. And so I really feel what we need to be doing is thinking about, how do we get more radically person-centered? How do we really help people's capacity to be housed and to be able to, live a decent life? And I think that takes a different model. I think we need something different from what we're doing, and to supplement, not to replace, but to supplement what we're doing so that people can get the kind of put together the package of help that they need, that they particularly need.
And as we said about, investigating the housing issue and trying to come up with some possible solutions. We thank you very much, by the way, for helping guide us right at the very beginning here. What would you recommend that we do?
Oof, that's a big question. I think there's many things that you could do. I think, as I've mentioned to you, I think one of the things I hope you can do is to put a human face on this, because I think if we don't feel a sense of obligation and not compassion, but really an obligation to each other, then it's always going to be, well, it's going to be inconvenient for me if I have two people living next door instead of one person, you know, sharing an apartment. Yes, they're going to have two cars instead of one. Yes, that's going to be inconvenient. Yes, you know, I mean, so all of those things are true. And so I feel like one of the things we desperately need is a deeper sense of the way in which we're all connected, and that my sort of ability to live and thrive is tied to people who I probably think I don't even know, although maybe I do know them. And so I hope that one of the things, in addition to solutions, in addition to many other things like that, I'm hoping that what you do can just make people feel that, you know, this is a community issue, and we need to solve this as a community.
Another thing that you mentioned was how important really hope is. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I think cynicism is so deeply ingrained in our so much of our culture now. And I think there are solutions that can work. As a person of faith, I mean, I have to say, I don't bring this to my job, but just that I believe that there's a power of goodness, a power of healing, a power of transformation, and that we need to believe that we can do better, and we don't need to be sort of in a total sense of despair, although there's many things to despair about, because if we just put our minds to it, and this is a rich country, most people, I think, when they understand, care about other people and are prepared to do something. And I think it's just, how do we galvanize that? How do we tap into that energy so that people don't just say, oh, that's just the way it is. It just has to be that way. And have some sense that, yes, we can do something here.
Kathy, thank you for trying to condense a very complicated issue into a very short podcast. Will you come back as we're in the middle of our project and talk to us again?
Anytime.
Thank you so much.
I'm Carlos Virgen, the Assistant Managing Editor for Audience Development at The Day. In 2022, we plan to launch a project called The Day's Community Journalism Fund to investigate the issues that affect the economic future of our communities in southeastern Connecticut. We plan to start with the Housing Solutions Lab to look at the issue of housing. Affordable housing, zoning laws, homelessness, housing insecurity, all from the perspective of those people most disproportionately affected, and with a focus on solutions. We need your help to expand our resources and staffing to report on these vital topics. We are launching our fundraising drive with a Giving Tuesday goal of $5,000. An anonymous donor has agreed to match donations up to $5,000. Giving Tuesday is officially on November 30, but please feel free to visit theday.com/givingtuesday to donate now and support this important work.